Welcome to Orchard Conversations, a podcast brought to you by the Orchard community.
Hi, friends. My name is Benjamin J. Thomas. Welcome. Today, I'm just hanging out in my workspace eating a chocolate-covered strawberry delivered by my daughter's boyfriend that he handmade for her for Valentine's Day and then gave me one. How sweet is that? Come on. Winning points, Jasper. Winning points. Hey, I'm just hanging out in my workspace as I do a lot of mornings here. Just about every day I spend some time sitting here before I kind of begin my day, kind of taking account of my projects and planning out what I want to get done for my day, setting goals, checking out my calendar. Inevitably though, within about an hour, maybe a less even, within about an hour of setting my goals, I inevitably get interrupted by something or someone, a friend or family member stopping by. We have a wonderful, beautiful, large family and community here, and sometimes they stop by, and or I'll get an unexpected phone call, or someone needing help, or wanting me to help solve a problem or fix something that needs resolved. And now, for the longest time in my life, these little detours would totally derail my day, because I literally would just say yes to everything that came my way into my awareness, literally prioritizing everyone else's needs over my own. But then I started observing this pattern and observing my need to resolve everything, my need to please everyone, my need to make peace with everyone, and how often that all came at the expense of my own well-being. There's this one tool that's played a really vital role in helping me grow in that kind of self-awareness, and that's the Enneagram. Once I started discovering and identifying myself as an Enneagram 9, the peacemaker, I started to see how these little tendencies of mine were actually just part of my personality and my makeup as a human, and kind of normalized it a little bit for me. I started to learn ways that I could lean into the strengths of my type, and how my ability to see from all different perspectives could be my superpower. But then also started to see how my unconscious behaviors were sabotaging parts of my life. So what is the Enneagram? The Enneagram is a self-awareness tool that offers all kinds of insights to how we work as human beings, identifying our motivations and our behaviors. And by working with the Enneagram, it can serve as a tool for self-discovery and personal growth and also helping us understand each other. The Enneagram has a really interesting history. It's, you know, got probably of all the different personality typing systems out there, it's got one of the richest, most profound and deep histories with influences from the early Christian mystics, the ancient Sufi traditions and other spiritual and philosophical teachings. And then in the 20th century, it emerged in like the form that it is in now, when we had a bunch of scholars that started putting their heads together and sort of synthesizing it into the modern form that we understand the Enneagram to be today. The Enneagram outlines 9 personality types, each of these types offering insights into distinct motivations, fears, and behaviors. And through these 9 types, which are often illustrated in this Enneagram figure that I'm showing on the screen here, the Enneagram, it can serve as a kind of mirror to understand yourself better, and fostering personal growth and really empathy with yourself, and also self-awareness that helps you reveal patterns that might be hindering your own personal development and spiritual development. So over the course of these next 6 weeks, we are going to be having a series of conversations about the Enneagram and how we can use it for our own personal growth. All of this is going to be taking place for us over the season of Lent. Lent is the season in the Christian calendar that is an introspection season. It's a season of going inward, journeying inward to get honest, brutally honest with ourselves. This is why people fasted during Lent and why often that's a practice today. It's kind of stripping things away so that you can see more clearly and notice the patterns of behaviors that have maybe gone unchecked a little bit over the last year. Engaging with the Enneagram during this season of Lent gives us this really beautiful and structured opportunity to explore and address aspects of our lives that might be holding us back. Carl Jung wrote that until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate. Until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate. These next 6 weeks are going to be all about raising our consciousness in a really, really, very real and practical way, taking back a little bit of control and taking steps toward becoming who we've actually been created to be. And of course, we're going to be doing this together. You're not alone on this journey. You're connected to this community. We're going to be holding space for each other to examine and explore these inner dimensions of ourselves. And through our own personal growth, we're going to learn how to show up better for each other and learn how each other works, assisting really in our own growth journeys, helping each other out in that way. So, speaking of other people, I'm going to invite Scott and Anna now to join me. Let's dive into our conversation today. Hi, friends. Welcome to Scott Hodge and Anna Hammond. Thank you for joining us today.
Hello, hello.
It's good to be back in this format.
I love this format, and I love talking about this stuff with both of you. I can't wait to have these conversations. I've been really looking forward to these. We're talking about self-awareness. So this whole series is called Me, Myself, and Why, which is, this is Lent. We just talked about that. And it's a season of introspection, and we have this tool called the Enneagram we're doing that with to help us grow in our self-awareness. And I know that each of you have had a kind of pathway with this and learning about the Enneagram and yourselves through it. And I'm wondering, what was that like for you? Do you remember when you first encountered this tool called the Enneagram?
I do. It's probably 10 years ago, 12, maybe 15. I don't know. Man, time goes by. But
weird, right?
I believe we had this Richard Rohr book, The Enneagram, whatever it's called. And, you know, I started reading about the seven, which is my number, and it was just undeniable. It was, you know, sometimes you read things and you're just like, I don't know. This was like, oh my God, they just nailed me.
Mine was, I think, 2012, based on like journals and stuff. And it was a group of friends who kind of got into it around that time, and they were like, hey, you should check this out. You should do this. So I did it. I had the opposite experience. I read the description for the number three, which I am not the number three. And I was like, oh, that's me. I'm a three. And we'll get into the numbers, I guess, in a little bit. But I thought I was a three for probably like at least 5 years, I think.
Were you wishing you were three? Were you like, I want to be a three? Like, was that what that was about?
I have a very strong... I'm sure as we get into this series, we can dig more into like mistyping and stuff. I have a very strong three wing, which
makes sense.
We'll get there.
And it's so common. And maybe that's a good starting place also is for folks to know that this is a journey. It's not about finding your one number and holding on to it like it's like life and death. And it's a journey of discovery that, you know, for me, I definitely had a hard time uncovering my number, what I identify as a nine now. And I had that experience where, you know, they say that when you read about a certain number and you start to feel a little like guilty inside, a little bit almost shameful, that those are little clues to this might be your number. And that's definitely the nine. I was kind of fighting it. I thought a long time I was a four. I thought I was a seven. And I still have like a lot of feelings about those numbers. We'll talk more, but yeah, that's the thing. Is there something you would say? Here's another question I just want to, before we could dive into talking, because we're going to walk through numbers a second. Is there something you could say? Because there are maybe some listening and watching this that are skeptical of this whole thing, because they've been like, I've seen personality typings. I've done the Myers-Briggs, this, that, yada, yada, yada. I don't like to be put in the box. What do you say to those people right now about the Enneagram that might make it stand apart as maybe a little bit different than some of those other tests?
Well, you're probably a five. No, I'm just kidding.
Or an eight. Like, don't put me in a box.
I would say, put you in a box. Yeah. I would say that what draws me to the Enneagram is that it really is a tool for growth and for the journey. It's really a tool. It's not just a label of like, oh, I'm a this. I'm, you know, I have these strengths and these weaknesses, and this is just how I am forever. Like, it kind of provides you with insight into yourself so that you can decide those kinds of things. Like, I want to grow in this area, or, you know, here's something that about me that I'm actually ashamed of that I want to bring out into the light, and I want to get healthier in this area. And over the years of using this tool, it's really, really helped me to, I almost wish it wasn't numbers. I wish it was like colors or something, because I feel like there's so many different hues. Like, it's not just like 9 boxes. It's like
right. All
the shades of the rainbow are in there, and you can kind of move around a little bit and sort of figure out like what's your sweet spot in this season of life,
and where
do you want to be growing?
Yeah, that's great. It's helpful. Yeah, I think I would say that there's a dynamism to the Enneagram that
sometimes
seems to be lacking sometimes in some of the other typing systems, although they all have their strengths. I like that the Enneagram has some really deep and like historical roots in some spiritual traditions that seem to inform it. It seems as if it gives it a little bit more depth and like earthiness to it. And I like that it's something that it's very much helping me look at how am I a healthiest version of myself? How am I the best version of myself? Not just like, oh, well, you're this, so you're good luck with that. It's like, know yourself so that you can be the healthiest version of yourself in every given moment in each season. So, yeah.
This is a tool. People got to remember this is a tool. This is not, you know, well, the Enneagram's not in the Bible. Well, there's a lot of things that aren't in the Bible that we use in our lives to grow ourselves and to understand ourselves. Mm. And, you know, this idea that all truth is God's truth. If the Enneagram is revealing something about your life that can help you grow, that's a good thing. That's a very positive thing. And there sure is a lot, if we want to get like biblical or scriptural, there's a lot of calling forth of understanding yourself and examining yourself and being aware, you know?
Yeah.
So this is a great tool to do that, I think.
And certainly for a community like ours, whose mission is all about helping people become who they're created to be, this is just a tool to do exactly that. We've been talking a lot about these numbers. So we're like 9, 7, 4, 10. There's no 10, just kidding. Anna, would you mind just walking us through these numbers a little bit and talking a little bit about like the core motivations of each number? Because this feels like a good starting point just to give a little bit of a framework for just real briefly, because you know, each of these could be its own teaching itself.
Yeah. So I'll share the name of the type. The numbers, that their names are changing kind of based on who's, you know, which Enneagram wisdom you're looking at. And then a little description. But what I really hope people pay attention to is this core desire, this motivation. Like, we've called this series Me, Myself, and Why. And so we want to use the Enneagram not just to figure out what we do, like, oh, that's such a 4 thing to do, but really to understand ourselves and each other. Like, why do you do the things you do? Mm-hmm. What's motivating you? What's driving you? Like, we could all try our best to do something, and the reason that we do that might be different from number to number, person to person. So getting into that why is what I want you to really listen for here. So starting at number one is often called the reformer. Their core desire is to be good, to be correct and right. And they often look like perfectionists who strive for improvement and have this strong sense of right and wrong. And then moving into type 2, known as the helper, and they have this core desire to be wanted and to be loved. And 2s often are caring individuals who are very good at supporting and nurturing others, often putting others' needs before their own.
2s are really great.
Then we get to the type 3. 2s are awesome.
Are amazing.
Mm-hmm. All of of these numbers are awesome.
They're all awesome.
We're going to say that about all of them, but there's some that you're like, you love hanging around twos because you're like, you know, you can count on them. You know, they're just going to fill in the gap to help in whatever way they can.
Type three, which is what I identified as for a long time, is the achiever with this core desire to be valuable and be admired. And they are often success-oriented, image-conscious people, usually have a strong drive to excel, to achieve their goals, to be seen as like a successful person, right? Type four is known as the individualist, which I am a type four, and I don't like that name, but we don't need to get into that right now. the core desire being to be authentic and to find meaning in life. So fours are often deeply creative and expressive. They often feel very unique and different from others and have a rich inner life. Mm-hmm. Which
love those fours. Love those fours. The fours are awesome.
Type five, the investigator. They have a core desire to be competent. They want to be capable people, and they are often curious, analytical. They seek knowledge and understanding. They want to be experts, and that often they are detached and private. And then we get to type six, which is known as the loyalist, and their core desire is to be secure and to be supported. And they are often very responsible and trustworthy people who value security and loyalty. And they often do struggle with anxiety and doubt. Mm. Type seven. Type sevens are okay, I guess. Type sevens, surprising no one, are the enthusiasts. With a core desire to be satisfied, to be content. And they are often fun-loving and spontaneous. They avoid pain and discomfort, and they seek out happiness and adventure. And then we get to type eight, the challenger. And type eights have a core desire to be independent, to protect themselves and those they love. And so that often looks like people who are very strong and assertive, who stand up against injustice and take steps to protect whatever they feel is deserving of their protection. And then type nine, the peacemaker, their core desire is to find harmony, to be at peace, to be in harmonious situations and spaces. And so they are often very easygoing and accommodating. They are averse to conflict, typically. And they often can kind of blend into their surroundings as a result of that need to sort of just be harmonious, go with the flow. They kind of can lose their selves in that space. So that's all nine.
Nice. Nice overview. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Very great. That's very helpful. Yeah. And they're like what we mentioned earlier, it's a journey of getting to know these numbers. You know, for me, the nine, I actually fought against it for the longest time. I do identify as a nine now. Although when I take a lot of tests and I see myself in the seven a lot, and I have, I tend to have a lot of seven friends too, which is kind of funny. And I don't know if that's just
everybody
my
should have a lot of seven friends.
Everybody
seven friends are great. Friends. They'll do all the planning.
And we're going to get into all sorts of fun things about where each of these numbers kind of go in integration and disintegration or health and unhealth. There's wings, there's all these subtypes, things like that we're going to get into in subsequent weeks. But we wanted to start off with just this as we are kind of leveling the playing field and going, all right, let's talk about these numbers and what resonates with you. So if you're new to the Enneagram, and if this is one of the first times you've really even like encountered this, you might be asking like, well, how do I even start on this? Is there like a test you can take? The easy answer is, yeah, there's definitely tests you can take. Most of the reading that you do about the Enneagram from teachers who have been steeped in it for a really long time will tell you tests are only going to scratch the surface. And the real way to get to know these numbers and know yourself through it is to really dive in and just listen to stories and hear a little bit of like the heartbeat and the motivations of them. So that though can also be intimidating. So is there any, how can we recommend, and maybe the two of you could give some ideas too, how do you recommend people go about starting this journey of exploring the Enneagram if they're new to it?
Well, I would just echo what you said there and remind people that it is a journey. This is not like there's no prize for you figuring out your number as fast as possible and then like ticking that box and moving on with your life. Like it's perfectly okay if you're like, I think I might be a this, but I might be a that. Like, and that's okay. Like even the whole series, if you never land on your number, like there's no you know, bonus points for figuring it out. Mm-hmm. So I think that some really good places to start can be, there's tests available online that will kind of help you like get a sense of, oh, here's some numbers where I seem to be really high, in those areas. And then you can go and read more about like, say you take the test and you score really high for 4, 9, and 7. And then you go in and you read those individual parts and you just kind of explore and sit with that. There are also some good books. Do we want to get into recommending books right now or do we want to hold off?
Let's hold that to the very end. We'll hit that in a second because
we'll do
some recommendations. You know, it is actually kind of funny. You mentioned 4, 9, 7. That's the three of us. And since a lot of folks may be listening or watching this, they know us to some degree. It might be helpful to know that Anna, you identify as a 4. Scott, you're a 7, and I identify as a 9. How is it that those numbers, and once you kind of came to that, that that's actually served you, though, in your growth and your relationships and your spirituality?
Yeah, well, you know, it has been really a helpful tool in my life personally, but then also I think in relationships. You know, so as a 7, you know, 7s are like Anna just shared, very optimistic, very positive, very energetic, imaginative. We are 7s, you know, we typically really good at planning and envisioning future possibilities, always looking for something intriguing and interesting and all of that. On the other hand, 7s can struggle with being very impulsive and very distracted. We can get very bored very easily. And like, I think there's a fear in boredom, like I have to be excited about something all the time. And so, you know, it's been interesting, like the aversion to boredom and to the mundane and learning how to, learning that the mundane is not going to destroy me. Mm. Or that boredom or that pain is not going to destroy me. Going through some major grief in my life, knowing that I was a 7 and what my tendency would be to push the grief away and the sadness away, helped me to understand that I actually need to do the opposite of that. I need to be willing to sit and be present in the pain. And as I've done that, it's taught me that thing that I'm so afraid of, it won't destroy me. Hmm. In fact, not only will it not destroy me, it will help me to be present to that pain. So yeah, I mean, I could give so many examples, so many stories, but yeah, I think that's self-compassion. I mean, because I think it's easy to see certain behaviors in our lives and think like, what's wrong with me? Why do I always do that? Right. Well, the Enneagram is kind of like, well, that's because the Enneagram is sort of like, here's how you show up in the world. Mm-hmm. And here's what it looks like when you're healthy. Here's what it looks like when you're not so healthy. Right. And so for me, it like the Enneagram lightens all of this stuff up. Right. And you start, and when you get into connections with people who understand the Enneagram, you know, they'll like other 7s that I talk to, I'm like, oh my God, yeah, I totally get it. And they're like, yeah, yeah, you know, I get it too. And it's like, okay, I'm not alone. I'm not crazy.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. The self-compassion piece is really huge. And, you know, being able to hold that kind of space for yourself and to have a pathway also for you to recognize these patterns and then go like, all right, how can I show up? How can I grow from where I was even a few months ago? Now that I have this awareness, now how do I show up to allow myself to step into that continuum of health?
There's freedom in this, right?
Oh yeah.
This is what Jesus says, you know the truth will set you free. And there's a freedom in this that's beautiful.
Mm. Well, I think there's something really, I mean, it's in scripture about like letting the light into the dark corners of, you know, of your heart. Like God sees all of that. And so it's almost a journey of like us seeing it too, you know, like it's in the Psalms, like God knows every inch of your heart. Mm-hmm. Do you know every inch of your heart? And then I think it's like in inviting that light to come in and allowing ourselves to examine these things, like that really is where so much growth can happen. And I know that's true for me personally on my journey, as well as like walking through that with other people, with friends, with my relationships, being able to understand like, oh, that's why you're like that. And that's why I'm like this. And there's a like a kind of a mutuality to that. And also just like, how beautiful is it to be human? There are so many different ways to be human. Mm-hmm. Like there is not just one particular way that is like the best way, the ideal way. And if you're one, you're probably like, no, there is a best way. but like, there isn't like a perfect way to be a human. There are all of these different ways. And the beauty from it comes out of, and this is, I'm a four, right? So I love, I'm kind of the opposite of Scott, where I'm like, yes, let's sink into the dark bits and find all the sorrow and the pain and like write poetry about it.
Yeah,
I'm the, as the but nine, like, I can see it all. I go, oh yeah, yeah, that's true, and that's true, and that's true.
But just how gorgeous it is to find all of these beautiful ways to be images of God, right? Like, and so to me, it helps me recognize, like, oh, you know, the individualist. I'm over here, like we're all individuals. It's so beautiful. Yeah.
It's really knowing that and knowing like that each of these like little quirks about us, like they're likely tied to something that you'll see archetyped in the numbers, and they can be your greatest hindrance or your superpower, and it can be both of those things at the same time sometimes, even on the same day. So as nine, as a peacemaker, I can see all the other perspectives and all that stuff from people, and I can totally lose myself in the whole thing. And that is both my greatest strength and my superpower, and I'm still learning how to harness that. We're going to dive so much into this stuff, and I can't wait to hear how these conversations go in the table gatherings and in your own explorations if you're watching this on your own or whatever. We're going to leave you with a couple. First, we'll talk test stuff. I know we just talked bad about the idea of tests, but we will go ahead and link one that is actually a pretty good test. It takes about 10 minutes or so. At the end of this liturgy, if you're watching this as part of a table gathering, we're going to put a little link, a QR code on the screen for you to scan that you can actually do it right here today, which is great. It's a great starting point. So even if you're like pretty sure what your number is, do it, because you'll get a little bit more clarity and insight. And if this is new to you, it'll help. It's a pretty decent test of the tests that are out there. But again, it's just a test. It's just a starting point.
Don't overthink it either.
Don't overthink it. Yeah, totally.
Right, just
we're also going to drop in some links. Center for Action and Contemplation, Richard Rohr, like he's done so much work on this stuff, man. He has done some incredible, incredible work. So we're going to link to an article there that kind of helps you dive in if you're new to this. And are there any books or podcasts or resources that either of you have encountered that you're like, yeah, this one's really helpful?
I've got one I'll throw out. This is one that I actually often will purchase for people who like friends who are getting married or whatever, because this has to do with relationships. It's called The Path Between Us, an Enneagram Journey to Healthy Relationships by Suzanne Stabile, whatever. I don't know how to say it, but yeah, it's great for those of you who are in a partnership to help each understand each other better. It's a great one. Really, really accessible.
Yeah. Agreed.
She also co-authored one with Ian Morgan Crone, The Road Back to You. And that one was really helpful for me toward the beginning of my journey. And also, I think, really helped me, because I think she starts with the nine.
I think so.
And that was a really good one for me. That one was where the light bulb went on. with my husband, who's also a nine, where I was like, oh, that's why you're like that. That was a really good one.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
But isn't that what's beautiful about this is it's mm-hmm. it is like that. It's like, oh, okay. So, you know, she's not just being a, he's not just being a whatever.
Yes. Yes.
It's freeing. And you just go, mm-hmm. You can almost laugh about it.
Totally.
It just makes it all lighter, you know?
It does. It's
right.
It's that fine balance also between like knowing each other, understanding each other and not typing each other or putting each other in boxes. And like, you know, it's like, but it adds an element of like conversation and fun to it. One of Joy and I's favorite things to do is sit around and watch our favorite TV shows and Enneagram type them. So, so we'll put these links out in chat and in the podcast notes, all of those things. And we're going to be talking way more about all of this stuff. Anna, you have something to share. It sounded
like. I just want an honorable mention to the Sleeping at Last podcast. Oh, yeah. Sleeping at Last did a project, Ryan Neal, a few years ago now, where he wrote a song for every single number. And then in his podcast, did a deep dive with Chris
Hewerts.
Hewerts. I never know how the vowels are in his name. Chris Hewerts.
Say it fast and with confidence.
Totally. And Chris Hewerts. Yeah, Chris Hewerts. And his book, The Sacred Enneagram, is also really interesting because he doesn't go in order like by type and have a chapter on each number. It's more about like how to use it as a tool for spiritual growth. So it's a good book to pick up if you're a book person. But if you're not a book person, that album and the podcasts that go with it are really, really great.
It's I'll second, third, fourth that to death. It's so good. Great work, Ryan. That's it. That's great. We're going to have so much fun. Anything else to share before we sign off for our conversation this week?
No, I think everybody ought to just go to that link, mm-hmm. do the thing.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Just jump into it.
Dive
have some
in.
Fun.
Don't be afraid. Yeah. Have fun with it. That's a good.
Yeah.
You can always change your mind.
That's right. Yes.
For sure.
All right. Thanks so much, both of you, for joining. We'll be chatting soon.
Thank you.
Scott and Anna, thank you so much for your wisdom, your insight, your vulnerability, sharing your stories. I think it's so helpful for us to do this in community and connection with each other as we explore these deep parts of what motivates us, what drives us, what we fear, what we love, all of those things that the Enneagram kind of brings up. Let me ask a few questions for you today that you can ponder as part of your table gathering together, if you're part of a table gathering today. Or if you're just kind of watching this or listening to this on your own, these are great reflection questions just to journal about. First off, how are you coming into this whole series? What's your previous experience with the Enneagram? Is this brand new to you? Is this, are you just, where are you at with this whole thing? Is there a particular number maybe that you already identify with or you just kind of resonate even just hearing a little bit about it? Maybe there's a particular number you resonate with. What kind of hesitancies do you have about this? You know, I think it's totally fair. If you are uncomfortable or this is bringing things up, be as honest as you can with yourself and with others. What hesitations do you have about all of this? And lastly, how do you hope to grow through this series? Maybe there are some patterns that you see in your life that you want to get a little self-awareness around, that you want to help yourself grow through, or maybe you want to get some clarity on what drives you, what motivates you. Maybe you want to get a little insight on other people's types, someone else's type, people in your friend group or your family that's going to help you better your relationships. Like we mentioned in our conversation, there is a test that we are going to recommend to you. It's called the Eclectic Energies Enneagram Test. We're dropping a link here in the show notes if you're listening to the podcast. And it'll be at the end of this digital liturgy. We'll put up a little QR code and link on the screen so that you can snap a picture of that. And if you're part of a table gathering, we encourage you to take this test individually before diving into your conversation today. The test really just takes about 10 minutes or so. I think it's really helpful just to get us started in this whole journey together. Thank you so much for being part of this series. We can't wait to hear how all these conversations go. peace and light.
Hey, what's up, friends? My name is Scott Hodge, and I'm the lead pastor of the Orchard Community. We're so glad you've joined us. Now, as we bring our gathering to a close, I want to take a moment, and I want to remind us about how important your support of the Orchard Community is. You know, in a world that feels at times so disconnected, we strive to create a space where everyone feels they belong. You know, a place where compassion, inclusion, and spiritual exploration aren't just ideals, but realities we live by. But to continue the mission, friends, we need your help. Your support, it's crucial. It's what allows us to go beyond just maintaining and actually expanding the impact the Orchard is having. You know, from Orchard tables that bring us closer together in connection and fellowship, to our digital outreach initiatives that literally connect us with people across the country, your contributions make it all possible. And don't forget, listen, every donation, no matter the size, contributes to a larger story of hope and growth and community. And so this is much more than just about giving. This is about participating in a movement that believes in the power of collective action and the enduring strength of kindness. So I encourage you, if you're not already, to consider supporting the Orchard Community, whether it's a one-time gift or setting up automated giving on a regular basis. Every act of generosity helps light the path for our journey forward. And so I want to say thank you for believing in our mission. Thank you for your support. Thank you for your generosity. And you should know there's a couple ways you can give. You can, if you're watching this on Sunday, you can press the button to give right now in the chat window. You can also go to our website, theorchardcommunity.com/give, or you can always mail a check to the PO box that's on your screen. Thank you so much, dear friends. Now, I want to leave you with a benediction, all right? One of my favorite things in the world to do, so open your heart. And I want you to think about, as we close this sacred gathering on this first Sunday of Lent, let's carry with us that profound reminder of our belovedness, just as Jesus did on the banks of the Jordan River. And so may you, friends, go from here, holding close to your heart the truth that before anything else, you are deeply loved, infinitely valued, and seen with delight by the Creator. Think about that. In every wilderness you face, in every moment of doubt or certainty, may you remember the voice that calls you beloved, guiding you, sustaining you, and leading you towards growth and transformation. And so as we step forward in the days and weeks of Lent, may we do so with courage and openness, ready to encounter the divine in the quiet, in the chaos, in the faces of those we meet and interact with. And friends, blessings on you, beloved children of God, as you walk this Lenten path. May the peace of Christ be with you, the love of God surround you, and the fellowship of the Holy Spirit guide you today and always. Amen. Amen. Friends, you are loved. We'll see you again soon.